Okay, good to see you this morning. If you've got a Bible, turn to Daniel chapter 3, or you can go ahead and go on the app. You can take a look there in your bulletin, and there's a little place that you can download that app. It's really pretty neat, and you can just kind of click onto it when you come into the service, and you'll see all the scripture verses that we put on screens, all of the notes. And you'll see it there. You see the little icon there in your bulletin. Also, hey, I wanted to tell you guys too. I don't bring this up a whole lot, but every once in a while I'll bring it up. We are coming to the end of our budget year as a church. Finances. It is a lot of that is what makes a lot of things go around here. If you'll take a look in your bulletin, it's always there for you to take a look. It looks like we're a lot behind, but if you compare it, we're really not that much when there are as many of us as there are. And it's just a little bit. We've only got 4 weeks left in this budget year. I really think we're going to be able to come through right on budget. But I wanted to just remind you. I just share it with people, and then I'll just ask God to put it on whoever's heart to make it all come through. Because all of those dollars mean something. They all go towards something. It's a pretty neat thing. And you can take a look at that. And it's about 1%, I think, often, which is really not as big as it might look. But it is important. So I wanted to remind you today, again, we have today and 3 more weeks. Our budget year goes from July to June to be able to incorporate the school. So it makes it easier for there. So we do the church. Everybody does. So this budget year will end at the end of this month. Okay, good deal. All right, so Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3, we've been in this series on Daniel, and we saw a whole lot happen last week. And I just don't have the time to do a whole lot of recap. I'm going to do a little bit just so you can catch on. But I would really encourage you to pick up the previous couple, either through CD, go online, listen to them. Because this story that I think Tim shared with you at the welcome time, this story is well known. It's a beloved story. If you've never heard it before, then it'll be fine. You'll catch on real fast. But it's one that if you've been to pretty much any kind of Sunday school, vacation, Bible school, you're going to hear this one. And it has to do with these boys. But they're not boys at this time. And let me just give you a little bit of a recap. In Daniel chapter 1 kind of records the nation of Israel had been conquered by the Babylonians and conquered by a man, the king of the Babylonians. His name was Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar, as I've shared over the last couple of weeks, he was a little bit different. He wasn't just your typical thug conqueror, where they would come in and they would conquer the land and they would, you know, they'd steal everything, leave the population destitute, and just become a cruel tyrant until the people got hungry enough and tired enough to rise up, join together, rebel. And it was just kind of that way down through the centuries. You can read your history books. But Nebuchadnezzar had a different plan. He just was not simply a thug conqueror. He was a guy who, again, he was not benevolent, okay, not altruistic, definitely. But he had a plan to where he wanted to incorporate people into the empire. Therefore, you are part of us. You're going to see it today. And I want to kind of paint this picture for you. And he's got a plan. He's bringing every country he conquers. You know, he brings people back, like the best and the brightest, the craftsmen, and he trains them. They go to school and they learn, and then he'll use them in the ruling and governors in different ways, so that he's incorporating an empire. So it's not just Babylonians. It's everybody he's using. He's re-educating them for a particular way. Well, I want you to see today. Today is if you get the facts of today, it'll make this story come alive, which is really what I want to do for you today. I want you to put sandals on. I want you to walk alongside these three boys and see exactly what they were facing, or as much as we can know, and understand just the sheer pressure that was definitely being put upon them to conform. And I want you to know that Nebuchadnezzar had this idea. He knew that in order to incorporate an empire, again, to take all these different countries and have them all one country, a one world government of which he was the ruler. But he knew in order to do that, you're going to have a belief system, a one world belief system. That is why Nebuchadnezzar so much typifies the Antichrist of the book of Revelation. There is coming a day, and I don't know how in the world he's going to do it. But how in the world are you going to get all these different people groups together? Think about that today. Think about trying to get all of the different belief systems that we have in our world all together on one page. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch. But Nebuchadnezzar was attempting to do that because he was wanting to create. Therefore, what Nebuchadnezzar was doing here when he was issuing this, everybody is going to worship this new thing here, is it wasn't so much religious persecution, like so many have said. It was more political consolidation, right? He was trying to get a political thing going here. I don't think Nebuchadnezzar cared one thing about belief this, belief that. I think he was just trying to get everybody on the same page. And so he thought the best way to do this, if we're going to have one world government, we're going to have one world nation, then we've got to have a one world belief system. So he comes up with this new belief system. And you're going to see where he gets it from. It's pretty interesting when you really just stop long enough, look at the facts and say, oh, okay, I see. And that's what we're going to do today. But the most incredible part about this, and this is, as I pour back over this story and just kind of let it get into my own heart again, I was once again amazed at the incredible strength of these three Hebrew men, young men. Let's get their age right first. We'll start right off so you understand. These, and you're going to hear me refer to them as boys, but they're not boys. Now, they were taken as boys. In fact, when we go through the chapters of Daniel, there's going to be lots of time passage between the chapters. Not as much here, but a little bit. Therefore, they were taken at the age of 13, 14, 15 years old, and they were taken to Babylon, and they were put in this school for 3 years. So we know probably at this point, they're at least 20. They could be as high as the mid-20s, but definitely not over 25, I would think. So we're not, most of the time you probably heard the stories that they were boys. And it's just not the case because of their position. We learned last week, if you remember last week, there was this dream Nebuchadnezzar had. And this dream about this statue and this, you know, this head of gold and then silver and then bronze and then legs of iron. And then Daniel came in and not only interpreted the dream for him, so it has a Joseph-type story, but he told him the dream first. And if you were here last week, I don't have time to go into all of that. And so Nebuchadnezzar was blown away. And he says, I'm here to tell you, Daniel, your God has got to be the true God, because, or else how would you have known what the dream was and its interpretation? And again, the head of gold was a representation of Nebuchadnezzar. And God was allowing Nebuchadnezzar to see things that were coming, and that this whole plan of times of the Gentiles, if you know about all those things. If you don't, we'll get to it later in Daniel. So we have this picture. So Nebuchadnezzar knows Daniel's telling the truth. Nebuchadnezzar knows that this dream he had was from the Lord. Nebuchadnezzar knows that Daniel knows, or at least is have a connection with the true God, whoever that is. He still doesn't know, and you'll see that today. So he elevates Daniel. And Daniel is in charge of all of the wise men, the Chaldeans, that we talked about last week. And Daniel's probably only 20 years old at that time, and he's in charge. And then Nebuchadnezzar puts him in charge of a lot of Babylon. And then if you remember last week, at the very end, Daniel looks at Nebuchadnezzar and asks for a favor. He says, can I bring my three buddies along with me? And so they were all elevated to high positions. That all comes into play with this story. Me telling you what I'm telling you here is really going to come to play, and it'll make this story come alive. And then we'll look at some of the symbolisms, I believe, that are contained within it. But I want you just to see it yourself. I want you to walk it. I want you to get, you know, I always like to say, I want you to get dirt between your toes. I want you to feel this. Because if you understand this picture, it has tremendous impact. When you understand what they were facing, where they were, and what they were facing. Okay? They were taken from their homes. They were thrown into a pagan culture. They were attempted to be re-educated, reprogrammed. This is who you are now. We're going to give you everything. We're going to give you the best education. We're going to give you the best food. We're going to teach you culture. But we do demand your loyalty. And we do demand for you to basically sever yourself from everything else before. It's happening today. We talked about that too. All right, I've got to finish. So I've got to finish with past weeks. Let's get to this one. So the thought today is, I just entitled today, Faith Through the Fire. Faith Through the Fire. I have found that what you believe impacts your life. Everybody has a belief system. We are trying in our country through academia to say that I don't have a belief system. Everybody has a belief system. And so what is that belief system? And because it has far more impact on you than you can ever imagine. Where is it that you turn when things get tough? Those type things. So anyway, let's jump into this. There's one other thing I wanted to cover before we do. Daniel is not present in this story. Okay? And well, why isn't Daniel? Okay, that's my great answer. I don't know. Okay, I don't. I mean, I can give you things that I've studied, you know, and looked at, the people making, you know, surmises of why he wasn't there. Perhaps he was, you know, when they had this thing, it was out in the province on the plains of Dura, but it was in Babylon, the province of Babylon anyway. So maybe left him in charge back as Nebuchadnezzar came. I don't know. I don't know why he wasn't there. I don't know why he wasn't having to go through what these other three were going through. Again, we just don't know why he wasn't there. Okay, but it's significant to note that when Daniel, obviously writing this, you know, he was not there. So again, we don't know. Right? But we do have these three others. Remember, they've been elevated to high positions, and they were only 20-somethings. You got to keep those things in your mind as we read into this. All right, let's jump into it. Okay, number one. Okay, the problem that they faced, we're talking about these three Hebrew young men. And they came upon a real situation, whereas it's going to force you to choose. And where your faith lies will determine the choice that you make. I tell you what, I think there's coming a day, personally. Culturally. Boy, I never thought I would ever say this. But I think there's coming a day, culturally, you're going to have to make some choices. That's why I think today really fits with where you live, especially if you're younger. I believe you're going to be forced to make some. You probably already are being forced to make some choices. You're going to go along with what you're told to believe, right? Or are you going to stick with what you believe? Right. And those cultural choices are coming. I don't know that in my lifetime I'll see it governmentally. It might. Boy, as fast as we're moving that direction, I believe it might. But culturally, occupationally, financially, you're probably going to you're going to be faced with some choices. Okay? You've got this is what you're told to believe. And this is what you say you believe. And what happens when the two come into conflict with one another? Okay? You're going to see this happening. Now, these boys are really, they're, I keep calling them boys. I got to stop it. But, you know, when you've been ingrained with something all your life, that's what you think. All right? They're young. They're 20-somethings. They're probably 22, 23, 24. All right? The problem they face. Well, number one, underneath that is a statue. Okay? There's a statue. Here comes the problem. Again, I don't think, this is my thoughts, I don't think Nebuchadnezzar cares a bit about what you worship. He just wants everybody to worship the same thing. Nebuchadnezzar is creating an empire here. He's wanting everybody to worship the same thing so that there's not going to be any conflict, any problems within something he's trying to do. So this is political consolidation, political expediency, which we have plenty of today. And so when you take a look at this, this is the pressure that's being put on. Let's take a look, now, if you will, in verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits, and he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, as you take a look at that, okay, can you kind of go back to the first part of verse 1? It says there, he made an image of gold. Think about this for a second. Where do you think he got the idea for the shape of this image? Well, if you were here last week, you remember the dream that he had? What was his dream of? Okay, none of you were here last week. His dream was of this big statue that the head of gold and the chest plates of silver, and then hips and thigh were bronze, and then legs of iron, and then feet of clay. And he had this great picture, and it was told to him that he was the head of gold. He was one that was going to start something that's pretty amazing. So Nebuchadnezzar, if you hear last week, he was so enamored with what Daniel had told him. I mean, he's the head of gold, right? Josh, how long are these things going to keep falling in our service? All right. If y'all don't know, gosh, a month ago, that concert where they blew confetti all over in here. How many of you were at that concert? It's still falling. All right, so if you want to know why, next time he comes, no confetti, that's the reason. Because your pastor has ADD and he can't just overlook it. All right, good, all right, good. All right. Oh, where was I? Who knows? Okay, I got it. Okay. All right, so we got this statue and he's got this idea. So Nebuchadnezzar knows that was not just some weird, bizarre dream. He knows there's some truth in it. Because Daniel not only revealed to him the interpretation, he revealed to him the dream. And Daniel told him, in fact, in order for him to know the dream, God had to have shared it with him. And so it's an incredible thing. And so what else would Nebuchadnezzar do? Hey, well, let's just make this dream a reality. Now, there are some different thoughts of opinion that it was some other, you know, of the god system of the Babylonians, and it could be. We're not told that it was that statue. I just think it's amazing when you go from chapter 2 to chapter 3, where you have this image, this dream that Nebuchadnezzar had that had such impact on him, and now all of a sudden he's setting up this new belief system with this image, huge image he's setting up in the plains. I tend to think it'd be that one. Okay, but either way, it's the same way. So what he's doing is, we're going to read down through this. He has a statue. Okay, second part of it, he makes a law. What I'm going to call a summons. Let's take a look. Again, we're going to read down through some of this now, and you'll put some things together. Let's take a look. Then Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then, all of those people again, okay, gathered for the dedication that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that he had set up. Now, look at verse 4. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages." Now, don't miss this. When you read through the scriptures, just stop, because the scriptures don't waste words. They tell you something because you need to hear it. It says basically this, okay? O peoples, nations, and languages. So we're not just talking about Babylonians here. You see what Nebuchadnezzar's trying to do? He's getting everybody together And he's getting all, even the conquered areas. And he's telling them, hey, listen, here, guys, we're going to give you a chance. You're not going to be a conquered country. You're going to be part of a new country. And we're putting this thing together, and you're going to get to be a part of it. And we're all together here, right? We are one. And all this other stuff. That's why so many believe that this Nebuchadnezzar is just a picture or a shadow of so much of Revelation. Because have you ever wondered why the book of Revelation mentions Babylon so often? I think there's a lot of parallels there. We'll get to that later. So we have this great picture here. This great picture of these two. Oh, nations. He's basically saying you've got a great opportunity to not just be a conquered country, but to become one of the greater Babylonian empire. And here's what we're going to do. When you hear the sound of there's all kinds of horns, horn, pipe, lyre, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that the king Nebuchadnezzar set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast in the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as everybody here heard all of those types of music, all the people and nations fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. All right, let's walk through and share with you a couple of things, just so you can, that you may not know. Okay? So it's very simple. This is a very simple thing. We're all going to be on the same page here. And it's very simple. It's not complicated to understand. As soon as you hear the music, that's when you bow down and worship. And you pay homage, if you will, homage to this thing, this image. Now, let me just go down through. Let me explain to you, as I've looked them up, who are all these people? Satraps, prefects, governor, counselor, all right? A satrap is basically a chief representative of the king. He would be like the different provinces that people would conquer. He would be the one who was in charge of this entire province, but he would answer to the king. Okay? Now, a satrap, you have a prefect. A prefect was military. Most of what I looked up is a military leader. Okay? A governor was a civil leader in different areas within a province. A counselor was those who were advisors. Treasurers obviously had to do with finance. A judge has to do with the judicial system. And then magistrates are those who enforce the law. So you've got what you've done. He's brought everybody together who has leadership. Everyone who has everybody else underneath them. So that they're all coming together for this dedication. And then they're all going to go back to where they're from. And this is going to be the new law of the land. This is going to be all of us together as one. Again, that's why I tell you, I don't think Nebuchadnezzar was so much worried. This was not a religious persecution thing. This was to put the political thing all on the same page. I mean, again, pretty smart guy when you take a look at it, when you think about it. But then number three is the consequences. I want you to see there was something put to this. I've found that for every opportunity that you have, for every, if you will, temptation to compromise, maybe that's a way to put it, there's always consequences that go with it. It may not be this drastic, but there are always consequences that seem to go with it, or at least go with it for sure. And again, what we face and what you face today may not be as drastic as this. I want you to know that the principle is the same. That's what I want you to see today. Because this much pressure is put on these young men. And it's amazing how far their faith is to be so young. And when you see it, when you're standing there with them, it's pretty remarkable. So let's take a look at the consequences. Let's see what was going to happen. Take a look, if you will, in Daniel chapter 3. Look at verse 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. Now, who are the Chaldeans? Remember, they were grouped in with that big group of wise men. The Chaldeans, the magicians, the enchanters, the whatever, all that group were called the wise men. We talked about that last week, along with the Chaldeans. And so since Daniel had been elevated in charge of all of them, the three others that we're talking about here were elevated in other positions. And don't you know that these folks were not real happy with that? And so they, don't you know, they know. I mean, again, this is not something that just happens at the spur of the moment. This is something that takes planning. You've got this big event with everybody there. You send out all the summons. And I guarantee you, Nebuchadnezzar's had this thing planned for months. And so everybody knows what they're supposed to do. And so everybody else among them knows that these Jews are different than everybody else. And here's how we can get them. Here's how we can trap them. Here's what we can do. And so we'll watch them. We're going to make sure we're near them to see what they do. Notice that these three young men didn't go around signing petitions. Okay? They didn't go around trying to cause a rebellion, cause anything else. They just weren't going to do it. But I want you to know that there are always people watching. If people know that you're a believer in Jesus Christ, they're always watching you. Okay? And they're just hoping you mess up. Now, if nobody's watching you, then probably nobody knows you're a believer. You may need to think about that too. It's just the way it works. It is just the way, I'd love to tell you different. It's just the way it is as a believer. And so these three guys, they were followers of the true God. And so they're being watched. Well, you know what they're going to do. Here's what happened. If you know the story. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of all that music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship, be cast in the burning fiery furnace. Right? There are certain Jews whom you, don't miss this. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon. So it shows you from the previous chapter that these three young men, they have important positions, not as important as Daniel's, but they have important positions, and that's the motivation for why they're telling on them. Okay? They want them out. Okay? I mean, I've been here a lot longer than they, you know, and I've talked to my union, and they shouldn't be there ahead of me. Okay? And so this is the picture. This is what it looks like. And so they go to Nebuchadnezzar and tell him, you've appointed these guys. I mean, these guys, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to consolidate everything and get everybody on the same page. I know what you're trying to do, but you got three that aren't playing well, that aren't playing with others. And they're the three Jews that you appointed in charge of these different places. Now let's continue to read. All right. Over the province, Shadrach, Meshach, because these men, O king, pay no attention to you, nor do they serve your gods, or do they worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a furious rage, commanded Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. Now notice this. I think that Nebuchadnezzar looked at these three as disloyal. Again, I don't think he cared a hang about whether they worshipped his gods or whatever. I'm not sure he even believed it. Remember, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. But here is this picture of, you guys know what I'm trying to do, and you're being disloyal what I'm trying to get, the page I'm trying to get everybody on. That becomes a picture. All right, continue to read. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image I've set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of all that music, fall down and worship the image that I've made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Look at this. And who is the God that can deliver you out of my hands? You hear the arrogance? You hear the ego? You hear the attempt to instill fear and dominance? Interesting. So here's the picture. Here's the great picture. Nebuchadnezzar must really be fond of them because he gives them another chance. Right? I mean, he's willing to do the whole thing again. And let them, you're right, let's do all the music again. And if you guys will, okay, maybe, you know, maybe your back was hurting or maybe whatever, I don't know, but I'm going to give you another shot here because you guys are valuable. I don't want to lose y'all, so I'll give you another chance to do what I'm asking you to do. But if you don't, I want you to know you won't survive. So the consequences are real. The threat is real. And now you've got a choice. And what you believe in takes over at this point in time. If you believe in you, if you believe in what's best for you, then there is no decision to make. And this is how I have watched believers down through the years compromise in these areas. They make statements, silly statements, like, well, you know, everybody else is doing it. It's like, you know, kids say that to parents, right? And yet I've heard grown people say it. Well, that's just the way. Jeff, you just got to get with the times. It's just the way it is. This is what everybody is. I mean, everybody believes this. Everybody thinks this. Everybody does this. Okay? I think there's coming a time, if you are a believer today, where you're going to be in the, what I call the rejected minority. Sure. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that. Okay? I don't even go to the internet a whole lot. I go some, but I don't go a whole lot. I don't spend all my time on it like so many do. But that, just read that whole world. And so when you take a look at that, I just want you to see. It's easy to come up with excuses to say yes to the pressure the culture is putting on you. Okay? Nobody's ever going to find out. Think about where these boys were, young men were. They're stuck off in Babylon. They're never going to see their home again. They're never going to be around any of that again. They can do exactly what they want. Nobody's ever going to find out. You know, and by the way, we're in Babylon. This is their culture. Therefore, we don't need to upset the culture that we're in, right? Here's one of my favorites. I'll bow down on the outside, but on the inside, I'm still standing. Anybody know what I'm talking about? It's the excuse that people says, well, I'll just go along, play the part, but that's not what I really feel or think or believe. That is not who God's called you to be. Interesting, isn't it, though? It's amazing the number of excuses that we can give ourselves. Notice here that these boys aren't leading a rebellion. I'm not talking about being rebellious. I'm not even talking about being obnoxious. I'm not talking about being a crusader looking for a hill to die on. I'm talking about when pressure is put on you, I've found that what you truly believe in comes out. Right? When there are no consequences, then what you truly believe in doesn't really come out. But when it really comes out, is when there are consequences. And the bigger the consequences, I found, the more of who you truly are and what you believe comes out. I mean, it's just an interesting way to think, isn't it? Again, this is perfect for today. So I'll bow down that side. Here's another one. I'll bow down now and I'll ask God's forgiveness later. I've heard that so many times from people. I can't tell you how many times people have sat in my office and looked at me and said, well, Jeff, if I do this, will God forgive me? You know what my answer is? Sure. Sure. If you're a believer. If there's been a time in life you put your faith and trust in Him. But I've heard people say that. You know, I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to go ahead and they know better. They know better. That's why they're saying it. And yet, they jump in. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. Because, well, Jeff, if I know that I'll be forgiven, then why not? You'll see in a minute. All right? So you've got this great picture now, this great way of thinking. And now as you begin to see, we're going to kind of turn it around and let's all take a look. How's this, Jeff, this happened so long ago, how's this affect me? All right, number two is the faith that they followed. Now this is classic. If you're a calligrapher, is that a correct term? Calligrapher? If you can do calligraphy? I've got a great quote for you to calligraphize. I know that's not a word. Right. Now, and here it is. It's found in these verses. These are some of my favorite verses in the Scriptures of what it means to live. And live the life God's called you to live. Here it is. Listen to how these boys responded. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar, you don't have to give us another chance. We don't even need to have time to go over here and let's all talk about it. Hey, well, you know, we should. I mean, this whole conversation probably lasted 90 seconds. This was not something big. Why? Because these boys, listen, these young men, they already decided who they were before they showed up at this meeting. See, if you wait until this confrontation, you'll probably cave. But this decision was already made. That's why they look back at him and says, "We don't need more time. No. We have no need to answer you this. Look at this next piece. Here it is. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of your hand, O king." Now here we go. In other words, they look back at him and says, let me tell you something, king. We serve someone greater than you. That's basically what they're saying. We serve somebody greater than you. And it's been the principle that I have taught for years. As a believer in Christ, if you're a believer here today, you are to be underneath the governmental authority in which you are placed. Scriptures are clear. Romans 15, other places. Unless that government asks you to do something that goes against God's laws, God's commands, like in this case. These were not rebellious men, young men. But they did report to a higher authority than this king. Interesting. So they looked back at him and said, listen, we're here to tell you, the God that we serve is able to deliver us out of your hands, king, and he's going to deliver us. Here we go. Here's the calligraphizing you need to be doing. But if not, I carry that with me everywhere I go. My trust is in the Lord, and I believe he can do anything he wants to, and I believe he can deliver me from and through different situations. But there are times when he chooses not to, and I'm still going to trust him even when he chooses not to. You go back to the book of Acts, and you see where Peter stands up and teaches and preaches to 3,000 people come to know Christ in one day. In one day, he gets arrested and goes to prison, and the people are praying for him, and he's miraculously delivered from prison. Okay, that's great. That's great. My God can do those things. We're going to praise him for it. What about Stephen? Stephen's a but if not guy. You understand what I'm talking about? Stephen was the guy. He was the first deacon. He was the guy that the scripture says was so filled with the Spirit that the people around him just couldn't withstand the knowledge that he had of the scriptures. And he got up and he shared a nice little sermon. And he didn't get 3,000 people come to know the Lord. He got stoned. And that's not just drugs. That's what real rocks. Okay? Does that make sense? He was murdered. And some will ask the question, well, what happened to God at that time? God had a different plan. That's what but if not is. That's why you ought to have that written on your hand, or you ought to have some calligraphy of that somewhere to remember. I'm trusting God here, and if he doesn't tend to do it the way I think he ought to, I'm still going to trust him. That's Job. That's a comment from Job. Does that make sense? All right. Amen. All right, here we go. Here we go. Don't miss this piece. I love this thought. Because you hear some people say that you don't have enough faith. If God doesn't come through for you, it's because you don't have enough faith. That is not the truth. I am not God. You know, and if I was, you'd all be in trouble. Okay? I mean, because I'm just not him. I don't know his ways. His ways are so much higher than mine. I don't know what he's up to. I don't know the big picture. I don't know what he's doing. But I do know this. I'm going to trust him. I'm going to trust him. And that's what these young men were looking at him saying. They had enough courage. Because think about the pressure these guys are under. Put yourself right next to them in their sandals. And the most powerful man in the world, who has your life in his hands, at least your physical life, looks at you and says, you're going to bow down or you're going into the furnace. You're talking heavy pressure that had probably been on them for a while. Because this wasn't new news. They knew about it for a while. They knew this little event with the bowing down to the image was coming. They were probably even having to help organize it. Who knows? They knew it was coming, but their decision was already made before they got to that place. And when they got to that place, they would say, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. Why? Because God had a law that says you do not bow down to images, graven images. That is, things that have been etched out, stone, statues. Hear me, I've been to Israel several times now. My first time in Israel. You know what one of the guys told me? He says, well, you Christians are idolaters. I said, really? I said, why would you say that? And then after I visited all the, quote, Christian churches in and around Israel, I see why they think we're idolaters. Because you walk in there and you see all these people bowing down to all these statues. Does that make sense? And they're like, do they not know what the scripture says about bowing down to graven images? And I said, brother, you're right. What could I say? Don't bow down to anything. God's not part of a statue, not an image of him, not nothing. Not an image on the side of a building, nothing. Well, that's what these boys were talking about. Well, he alone is the Lord, not some statue. Interesting. Anyway, so as you put this together, pretty incredible. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image you've set up. No. Okay. Well, Nebuchadnezzar says, well, I appreciate your stand. You have my respect. That's not the way it worked out. Okay, he, like sometimes men and women of great power, had a huge temper when they don't get their way. And he kind of lost his mind. All right? And listen to what he did. Number three, the fellowship they found. Look at chapter 3, verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. See where it says the expression of his face was changed? Again, as I read the scriptures, I try to read slow enough to make sure I see everything. That means that Nebuchadnezzar was favorable to them before this instance. Does that make sense? So he knew them. He probably had a good relationship with them. He probably respected them. He probably leaned on even them a little bit. But here it shows the expression of his face toward them changed. That means he looked at this as the ultimate disloyalty. I'm not going to put up with that. Interesting. And he ordered the furnace heated seven times, more than it was usually heated, as if that was needed. But here's a guy that can be a little obsessive. Okay, continue to read. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind them, okay, and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. These men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics. Again, God, all this is put in here for a reason. These are just not unnecessary words. You'll see them in a minute. But cloaks, tunics, hats, other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Right? Because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who'd thrown them in. Verse 23. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste and declared to the counselors, did we not cast three men bound into the fire? And they answered and said to the king, true, O king. And he answered and he said, but I see four men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like the son of the gods. That's a pretty good translation too, by the way. Because Nebuchadnezzar's a pagan, right? He doesn't know. He's just looking in there and he says, we threw three, and I recognize three of them, but there's one in there with them I don't recognize, and it's something different. There's something different going on right here, and the only way he knew how to describe it, if you understand the pagan background of what he believed in, he called it the son of the gods, because all of the gods that he believed in had children. It's kind of what he thought one of them was. So when you look at this situation, it's a pretty powerful one in this, what I call the fellowship they found. But let's hurry along because there's a couple of things I don't want you to miss. In true, O king, verse 26, he came to the door of the furnace and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God. I think his tone is changing. Okay, servants of the Most High God, okay? Come out and come here. And then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they came out of the fire. And then all of the, you know, satraps, prefects, all those guys, king's counselors, gathered together, and they saw that the fire had no power over their bodies, and the hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Then Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel." Again, that's all he knew how to describe it. "And delivered his servants who trusted in him." And he said, "They set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than to serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, he makes a decree and he's going to kill anybody that speaks against their God." So, I mean, you know, he goes overboard like he normally does. But notice the teaching. Notice the thoughts here. And I'm going to lay a whole lot of stuff on you real fast. And I just want you to see it because you've heard the story. You've walked along. There's some applications you need to see. Why do I title this "The Fellowship They Found"? Well, they went into this fire. But if not, they would have just died in the fire. But God made a decision. We're going to do something different here. And this fourth person in the fire. There's a great symbolism here. Most believe, and I tend to be one of them, that this is a pre-incarnate Christ. Some believe it's one of the angels, and it could be either. But either way, the picture is the same. Is the picture of who Christ is. Remember all the pictures I've shared with you in the scriptures, Old Testament scriptures, about who Jesus is. You take a look at the Passover, right? You got the snake on the pole. Here's another one. What happens when you go through the fires of judgment, right? He's there. It's a great picture of who Christ is. In fact, I've heard this from people who've been through sometimes some of the harshest and toughest situations who are believers. And who lean to their faith and trust in the Lord. And almost to every person that I ever talked to, when they come through on the other end, they say, "I don't ever want to do that again. But I wouldn't change a thing for what I've learned about who the Lord is." Does that make sense? And that's an amazing thought. You know, so when you look at a story like this, when you think about it, there's a couple of things that you don't need to miss, okay? There's a couple of things you just don't need to miss, and how does this apply to your life? First thing is this. When we compromise, and we're going to, I mean, we don't want to, but that's the way you learn sometimes, through failure. But when we compromise, we lose the ability to impact the world for Him. Okay? If these kids would have had just taken one of their excuses and said, "Well, let's just bow down now and ask God for forgiveness later," they lose the ability to impact the world. Does that make sense? Yeah, God will just have to find somebody else. It won't be you. When we compromise who He says we are, then you lose out on God, the opportunity to make an impact on those around you. See, that's what compromise does. Yeah, they could have escaped the fire. Yeah, they could have lived a nice, cushy life. You know, being a prefect or some other thing that they were in the Babylonian government. But no, that made an impact. So number one is pretty amazing. Number two, your faith determines your priorities. Your priorities are going to determine your decisions. I'm here to tell you this. The decisions that you make are dependent on what you believe in, especially the pressure decisions. The decisions you make in your life over what you're going to do with your time, usually the great assets you have in your life, your time, okay, your finances, obviously, but also your abilities that are given to you. How do you use those? Time is the biggest one. But then in situations like this, what do you do? How do you use these things? Now, remember this. I'm not trying to put a heavy weight on you. Because sometimes you have to fail in order to learn. Like, look at David. I think that's why David's story is in the Bible. I mean, the guy, how many times did the guy deny who he was to get out of trouble, right? But eventually he learned and became one of the greatest. So it's not like you're going to do this perfectly. And if you've messed up in times past, that doesn't mean you have to mess up now and in the future. What I'm trying to say to you is just the simple truth of what it means, is that where your faith is will be tested and will be brought out when you're through tough times. I've heard it said that a Christian or a believer's faith can be illustrated by tea. All right? It only gets stronger when the heat is turned up. That makes sense. That's pretty cool. I don't think you liked it, but I thought it was cool. All right. Number three, and here's where we'll be done. All right. Faith through the fire will enable you to know God in a deeper way. You know the people in my life that I know that have such a close relationship with the Lord? It's not those who talk about it all the time. I mean, you can talk about it all the time, and I want you to talk about it all the time. That's not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is this, is that it's those who have been through the fire. And they've met him in different ways that you can only meet him when you go through something tough. Does that make sense? You see, if you compromise and get out of that, you miss the fact of watching him work like these three young men saw God work. Their lives were impacted in an amazing way. They had a relationship with God that was different than everybody else's. Now, another thing I want you to remember. Most of the time, we pray, oh God, deliver us from the furnace. Now, I'm not here to discourage you, but I've read through the scriptures lots of times. And God does deliver you at times from the furnace. But it's very rare. So keep praying, Lord, deliver me from the furnace. But more than likely, he's not going to deliver you from the furnace. He's going to deliver you through it. Why? Because that's where you learn the most about who he is. Right? If he just delivers you from it, you don't get to know him near as much as you get to know him when you go through it. Wow. Okay, I've got to be done. I can't tell you, this is just such an incredible thought, story. This whole series on Daniel is just so right where we are in our culture. Looking forward to it. You can make the applications as you would like. All right, let's all stand. We'll have a closing word of prayer. Tim, wherever you are, come running. And go ahead and stand up. And hey, if there's never been a time in your life you put your faith and trust in Christ, there's always pastors up here afterwards who'd love to talk to you. God bless you guys. Have a great rest of your day. If you're a guest with us, I'd love to meet you. I'm going to the guest reception right now. All right, begin. Have a good day.